Hello, everyone. Welcome to Will's Bird Brain. Today, we're going to class. I hope you brought your notepads. Now, turn to... Come in.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Kata. We were just about to get into today's lesson. How has birding been for you?
Birding has been great. I've definitely been noticing more pigeons in my day-to-day, admiring, saluting private pigeon. And I've been doing more explorations. Yesterday, I went kayaking, found some baby loons, and saw a little family, got to see them feeding the babies. It's very cute, very good experience.
That sounds like the perfect birding experience. You have been learning a bit more and branching out with your birding besides pigeons.
Yes.
All right. Well, today we are going to be talking about how to enhance your birding even further. So pull up a chair, grab a notepad. Let's get into it.
Yes, teacher.
You may recall our previous discussion on the concept of birding. What is birding? Who is a birder? How do you do it? All of these questions were answered in the Will's Bird Brain episode, What is Birding? If you haven't listened to that episode yet and you're a new birder, I'd recommend listening to that one first. Then come back and learn more here. You remember that episode, right, Kata?
Of course.
Awesome. Now let's dive into more ways to enhance our birding skills. To begin, let's recap what we already know about birding. What is birding? The appreciation of and engagement with birds wherever you are. Looking at birds, listening to them, following their tracks, etc. Who is a birder? Why, you are, my friend. If you're looking at birds, congratulations, you're birding. Remember, you can do birding however you like, alone, with a squad, totally depends on your own comfort level. Now that we've got the basics down, we're heading into the field. Where do I find birds? The amazing thing about birds is they're extremely versatile. From bustling city streets to the frozen tundra, birds can be found literally everywhere on Earth. That's great news for you, my birding friend. That means they're all around you, for better or for worse. When you're beginning birding, I recommend starting simple. Begin by observing the birds near your place of residence. What kinds of birds do you see? If you have a yard, try observing the area at different times during the day. Not seeing any birds in the grass? Check the bushes or the trees. Little birds like sparrows and towhee love to hop around under bushes, while you might find even littler birds like chickadees and bush tits higher in tree branches. Don't have a yard? No sweat. Try taking a walk around the block. Birds such as crows and pigeons can be spotted hanging around urban areas along sidewalks and boulevards. Every time you're walking around your neighborhood, going to school or work, or even taking out the trash, try and make a mental note of what kind of birds you find floating around. You never know what you'll find in your own backyard. Cool, you're officially ready to start branching out. See what I did there? Once you're ready to start exploring, you'll find the possibilities enormous. Start with the basics. Do you know of any local parks? Visit your neighborhood green spaces and try getting familiar with the birds you often see there. I like finding a park close to home that I can visit easily, 10 minutes or less away. This can be your go-to spot for nature time. Try having lunch there on a lazy Sunday afternoon, or pop by after a long day at work. As you spend more time in these spaces, you'll begin to notice more and more wildlife. All right, now that you're itching for the major leagues, let's find you a really cool birding spot. There are a few ways you can find new birding locations. One of my favorite ways to do this is to open the map app on my phone and zoom out from my location until I see green. On the iPhone map app, try saying that fast three times. Green spaces indicate some form of nature, a park, forest, mountains, etc. Seeing green doesn't automatically mean that you can visit these places. Always be aware of where you're entering. However, the nice thing about the green is usually when there is a big green space, you'll see a name and a park icon attached to it. This is my go-to method for finding parks to explore. Pay extra attention to parks with sanctuary, refuge, or preserve in the name. Usually, these are publicly accessible wildlife areas designed to nurture the local ecosystem. Lots of these places can be volunteer maintained or donation based, so please respect the rules and the boundaries and pay any admittance fees that are asked for. Once you're there, have a field day. Usually, these places are hubs for migratory birds and comfortable natives. Try visiting the same preserve at different times of the year and see how the landscape changes. Lastly, the Great Blue Sea. On your map app, pay close attention to blue as well. Blue indicates water, and where there is water, there are water birds. Cormorants, ducks, loons, there are so many exciting water birds to observe. Try looking for docks or piers or beaches open to the public and spend a couple of birding sessions getting a tan. There are even companies that take birders on sailing trips to see species that float around offshore. Yeah, did you have a question, Kata?
I did. What if I have a specific bird in mind? How can I find its natural habitat?
Lucky for us, birds are creatures of habit. Based on the species' historically recorded patterns, we can make educated guesses as to where to find birds. Whether it's finding loons based on where their chicks had grown up in previous seasons, like in the heart of Maine, or going to the Seattle Aquarium and seeing the nesting gulls. Lucky for us, usually learning more about where they nest and what they eat can help us track down birds. Another good way to do that to find specific birds is to use some of the tools that we'll be discussing later. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we know where to find birds. Should we bring anything with us on our expeditions? For sure. Here are a few tried and true staples for birding. Binoculars. Tools used to study faraway objects. Binoculars come in a variety of different magnifications, which have different prices. I recommend starting with a pair within your budget. When I began birding, I found a very cheap, slightly sus pair at Goodwill that honestly probably made seeing things harder. But when I brought them with me birding, I was automatically more engaged and excited about exploring. Like a real adventurer, right? So, try starting out with a placebo pair. Scopes. Similar to binoculars, spotting scopes are like mini telescopes used to see things way off in the distance. Like that little Merlin at the top of a 50-foot tree. Scopes usually require a tripod setup and will set you back a couple of hundo, but greatly enhance your birding experience, especially if you're trying to count birds in flocks. Cameras. When I started birding, I was determined to identify every bird I saw. However, I quickly realized birds are fast sons of guns. I wouldn't have 10 seconds between spotting a bird and it spotting me and dipping. Unfortunately, I needed more than 10 seconds to locate the bugger in my bird guide. Enter my cell phone. I got the bright idea to start photographing birds to aid in identification. If I can snap even a blurry partial image, that'll greatly help me determine what I saw. And snap I did. I got a small apparatus to fit over my binoculars as well, so I can even get zoomed in pictures on my phone. It was like a game. Snap, read, ID. Eventually, I upgraded to a digital camera, which gave way to even more fun with birding. But having a camera, even a phone camera, can really add depth to a new birder's learning process. Speaking of learning, how do you try and find a birding book that you like that's easy to carry around to casually start familiarizing yourself with local species? I personally recommend the Peterson Field Guide to Birds by Roger Peterson and the Sibley Guide to Birds by David Allen Sibley. These guides have many pictures, diagrams, maps, and tips for identification, just like the stuff that we're about to dig into. How to begin identification. Birds come in about all shapes and sizes. Some are tall and tubular, some are short and round, just like little cotton balls with legs. Luckily, the basic size of a bird can help tremendously when it comes to narrowing down a species. I like to call this categorization. The first thing you may want to do is to try and put the bird into a category. Categories can be created after you begin learning about birds and observing them. For example, after you have seen a few hawks, you may start to realize that they are big birds and like to soar in the sky. There's a category. Next, football-sized birds walking along waterways or leisurely floating. Ducks. As you begin to see these patterns, you will be able to quickly narrow the ID possibilities. If you know the bird in the water is most likely a duck because it matches the criteria for your category, you'll know where to begin your search. Small birds like sparrows or juncos can be in your little bird category, etc., etc. Now that you've narrowed the possibilities for the species you're identifying, look for defining features. In the gull episode, me and Paul discussed gulls having three defining features: their legs, their bill, their plumage. Most bird species have some sort of special indicator. Try and make a note of things that stand out when you're looking at a bird to narrow your options. For example, you see a big raptor flying overhead with two-toned wings. You may have noticed this is a signature trait of turkey vultures. Now, when you see a big bird up there without dark and light wings, you can rule out the turkey vulture. When looking for defining features, I recommend starting with their plumage, beaks, songs, and quirks. For example, song sparrows love to pump their tails when they sing, or pigeons bob their heads up and down when they walk. Things like that. You've got the bird possibilities down to a few birds. Good job. There's one more hurdle to overcome before you can be confident in your identification. For example, the male mallard duck has a green head with silver body plumage, whereas the female mallard is all brown with darker streaks throughout. This difference is called sexual dimorphism. That means the male and female of the species look different. Usually, this difference has a survival significance. Most females are dull browns and black, muted colors, to help them blend in when sitting still for weeks at a time, incubating eggs. Contrast that with males who want to be as flashy as possible to catch the eye of the female. Risk and reward. Sometimes the difference comes in the form of size. Like with bald eagles, the female is larger than the male. So, males and females can look different. Fine. Did you know that juvenile and adult birds can also look different? Chicks sometimes have different colored beaks and eyes that look out of place on their growing bodies, along with crazy hairdos. As chicks grow out of their cozy down feathers, their initial plumage is usually darker, like the female birds. The same is true for male birds in the off season, aka when they're not trying to impress the ladies. So that's during the winter, basically when they're just hanging out. These are a few ways birds of the same species can look different. Now that you can categorize and look for defining features, use this knowledge to confirm what species you are observing. Yeah, did you have another question, Kata?
It's a bit of a story and question. When we were out on the water, we also saw some female mallards who were muted brown, as you've said. But when she opened her wings, there was a bright flash of purple. So why do they also have lots of color?
The ladies like to show off, too.
So she was very pretty, too, but it's a hidden prettiness. Are there more female birds that have color like this?
That's a great question. And yes, they certainly can. A lot of the time, female birds of colorful species will also have some vibrant colors as well. The females of some species are even more colorful than the male, like the belted kingfisher. All right, if you're anything like me, you may like to keep your learning out of your fun. What if I told you that learning could be fun? Story time. When I was 7 years old, my siblings and I would hang out at the Boys and Girls Club after school. I thought it was exciting enough to have somewhere away from home to play with other kids. My favorite thing about after school was getting to get lost in the world of my Game Boy Color. There is the perfect game for a little animal-obsessed kid. Pokemon. I had Pokemon Silver and would carry around my Game Boy everywhere I went just in case I had a moment to play. Unfortunately, as an excitable little kid, I'd frequently get distracted with other cool things, like snacks or group games. One day, a bunch of kids were playing together in the rec room, and I decided to join in. I sat my Game Boy on the pool table and ran off, thrilled to roughhouse inside on a rainy day. Eventually, inevitably, my dad came to retrieve my sisters and I. We ran off to the car as we always did, piling into the backseat of our well-loved Chevy Blazer, affectionately called the Blaze. We buckled up and began our uneventful trip home. It was the perfect length for a quick bout of Pocket Monsters. I reached into my pocket, and the millisecond my fingers breached my pocket, time froze, and the camera zoomed into my wide eye like That's So Raven, as the realization I forgot my Game Boy on the pool table hit me. It was gone for good, and I knew it. The next time we arrived at the club, I immediately begged the staff to check the lost and found for me. They didn't find anything because, of course, they didn't. I just knew somebody snagged it. How dare they find it and not turn it in? From that day on, in bitterness, I refused to play another Pokemon game. I wouldn't go through the pain of losing it again. Okay, everyone, thanks for bearing with me. I promise that story had a purpose. I gave up on playing Pokemon, but I didn't necessarily stop playing. You see, birding is basically Pokemon in real life, besides the animal enslavement and peril. When you go birding in your local spots, you may see the same species over and over. However, if you keep going back at different times of the day or different days of the year, you may eventually start seeing more uncommon birds. If you're really lucky, you might even see a rare bird. That's kind of like finding the shiny Pokemon, or the rare ones that hop around every now and then that always evade your capture. Having a mindset like this can turn the repetitive aspect of birding into some spot of fun. You never know when you might stumble upon a shiny bird. Another way I like to make birding fun is by looking for other creatures. When birding, you're bound to stumble across all sorts of animals. During the summer, pay close attention to ponds for frogs and turtles. Speaking of water, if you're on the coast, keep a keen eye out for seals and invertebrates along the shore. Far away from water, snakes and lizards love to skate through the desert. You'll be amazed at how many animals you come across once you actively start looking, even in your own backyard. Deer, raccoons, the works. It's really exciting seeing other animals while birding, but I can get a little overwhelmed looking up for birds and down for reptiles, etc. Overwhelmed in a good way. Speaking of being overwhelmed, sometimes birding can be overwhelming because trees are dense and birds are masters of camouflage. And Kate is giving me that look. One of my go-to techniques is to stop and stare into the middle distance. Now I'm serious. While I'm doing that, I simply look for motion. Little birds in particular like to hop around short distances. This can give you the perfect opportunity to get a look at them before they fly off. Instead of trying to find the needle in the haystack, wait for the needle to bob up and down before locking onto it. like a magnet. Same method could be applied for listening. Instead of trying to lock onto a single bird, listen for outlier sounds that stand out against the cacophony of the forest. Another great thing about birding that we've touched on before on the podcast is the community aspect of birding. Tools like eBird Online or even Facebook can be great ways to meet new people and connect with birds in your area. If you're looking for a specific bird, you can even use eBird to type in a species that you're looking for and find out where it's been seen. So talking to other people can be a great way to learn more about birding when you're first starting out. Ask them where they like to go and ask your friends and family too. Maybe they have a secret kayaking spot that you've never heard of and they can send you out in the water and maybe see some loonlets. Speaking of loonlets, looks like we have another question.
Well, I was going to ask, do you have any favorite spots?
I do. I really love the Viles Arboretum in Augusta, Maine. It's the perfect mix of a few different ecosystems. There are dense forests, fields, and even some ponds. So I see all sorts of stuff, from birds to turtles, people every now and then. It's great. How about you?
Well, I am pretty new, so I don't know if I have a regular, but I think that is one thing I did learn was to find a local spot to come back to. So far, I have enjoyed nature walks in different places and listening to more songs.
I always love to just close my eyes and listen sometimes. Now, the last thing I want to touch on is one of the most important aspects. Remember to always be respectful of the birds and the environment when you're birding. There are some species that are endangered or protected that you might not find listed online. Like, they might not post locations to see owls where you could disturb their nesting or hunting. So be aware of these things when you're looking for birds to see. If you find a rare species or a threatened bird, maybe don't post it all over the internet without at least educating people on how to be respectful of their lives. That being said, I do encourage you to always talk to other birders and ask them where to find cool birds, because people that have been birding for quite a while usually have a number of secret spots, so to speak, to find different types of animals. Another animal that I'd love to see besides birds are moose. So I'm looking forward to getting to know the people of Maine so that they will show me where to find moose.
Good luck!
All right, well, I think I hear the bell, so that's all for today. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Thanks, Kate. I'll see you next time.
Bye!
Thank you so much for joining me on this bonus episode of Will's Bird Brain. If you have any questions about birding, feel free to reach out via email or Instagram at Will's Bird Brain and willsbirdbrain@gmail.com, or just say hi. I've got a lot of bird stories and photos to share, and I love hearing from you all. If you have any other tips on how to make birding more enjoyable for beginning birders, please share those as well so I can share it with the community. Until next time. Wait a minute, you're still here? Go off to lunch, or recess, or go birding. Or you're probably adults with jobs or whatever, so go home. Okay, I'll give you one more bit of birding advice to think about. When you're trying to identify a bird and you get it wrong, don't beat yourself up over it. It's happened to me so many times. I'll be 100% confident that I know exactly what I'm looking at, I'll even blast it to the world like, oh yeah, I identified this bird, and then kabang, it's wrong. It's kind of embarrassing and hard to accept that sometimes, but it's okay. Keep learning, keep having fun. That's what counts. And of course, always ask your friends for a second opinion if you're stumped on something. The bane of my existence is the sharp-shinned hawk. Don't even get me started. If you want to see embarrassing moments with me trying to identify sharp-shinned hawk, head over to the Instagram. Anyway, I have to run. See ya!